Good morning, diners and travelers. You're listening to On the Menu with Ann and Peter Haig, and I hope you're having a wonderful holiday season, imbibing and eating and at any rate.
And getting ready for a really Merry Christmas.
Yes. So we have some interesting local contributors to the program today. We occasionally like to do that, to integrate what's happening here that all the media all throughout the country is raving about.
It turns out to be some very interesting things going on, right?
Yeah. And so we do mostly national and international coverage, but we also like to acknowledge all the excitement happening in our own backyard.
And if you come to Pittsburgh, you'll know a great watering hole, as we call it.
There's a new hotel
and a unique product of whiskey named after one of the inventors of whiskey in the United States. I won't steal that story. You'll have to hang in there to find the answer to why Wiggle Whiskey is called Wiggle.
We had so much fun at this new rye bar in the restaurant called Butcher and the Rye. It's on the second floor bar, which is a separate bar and its own atmosphere. And I've never seen so much talent gathered in one place in the mixology vein in my life. So they were all lined up.
So we had
us good stuff.
Yeah, we had a good time with the food as well. And you'll probably be motivated to go there right now. And I suggest you go ahead and do that. There's a new bar in town. Sounds like the title of a song.
Yes, it does. It's the Rye Bar at Butcher and the Rye. We've just launched a new cocktail bar program.
And this is Spencer, spelled S-P-E-N-S-E-R?
C-E-R. S-E-R is the modern version now from the TV show.
So, and Spencer's last name is Warren, and he's pretty much of a lifetime bartender, I'm guessing. Am I right?
Yes, I started bartending when I was probably 25. Actually, originally when I was 18, but actually as a career when I was about 25, I opened my first establishment. But actually before that, I worked for an engineering firm. So it was kind of a nice little change. I got bored with engineering and started into the bartending world, and then from there to the cocktail world.
Now we're up above, I guess we're four flights of stairs, up above Butcher and the Rye. One of Pittsburgh's better known and very interesting and very, very delightful restaurants with the bar scene itself. Why reinvent the bar?
Well, we decided that we wanted more of the cocktails and more personalized experience with the cocktail program. And so the Butcher Bar, which is the downstairs bar, it gets so busy with the whiskey and the over 800 whiskeys that we have that we couldn't really concentrate and specialize as much and give the people the personal attention that they wanted. So we decided to make the Rye Bar, which is the upstairs bar, a lot more personalized and handcrafted and specialty, and limit the number of people so it's not too busy and you can enjoy yourself and enjoy your company, as well as get an experience with the bartenders, where the bartenders are also your servers as well as your bartenders.
Now, there's a group of guys back there, not just Spencer. There's a whole group of guys. Tell us something about those guys.
Yeah, so we brought in Michael Anderson. He's our bar manager. We brought him in from Louisville, Kentucky. And then we also brought Cecil. He was the bar manager at Meat and Potatoes, but he really wanted to get more involved with the handcrafted side of it, so we brought him over. And we also kind of stole Giuseppe, who's in charge of all of our ice program from the Livermore and Bar Marco. So we lucked out.
Now we're going to come back and talk about this ice program, because I'm really not sure why it's so important. So you're going to have to convince me of that. I have a feeling you might be able to do that. This is not just a static cocktail program, is it? A lot of restaurants, they have six cocktails on their menu, and that's it. You're doing way more than that.
Yes, we have 38 cocktails on our menu right now. We have 19 classics, and then we also have 19 of our own creations. And then we'll change them as the seasons go and change as well. But it makes it so it's a lot of prep and a lot of extra work. So we have someone specifically on our juice program. We have someone specifically for the ice program. And then we also have all of our bar staff here as well, which we have the four of us. And then we also have a couple more that are starting and training and getting it so they can develop and be able to move forward and help us develop and kind of stay ahead of the trend and stay with, you know, every major city that there is in the country, like a San Francisco. We want to keep up with those guys instead of sitting and saying, like, when I grew up, everyone told me Pittsburgh was, you know, you move to Pittsburgh if the world's going to end because you have 10 more years to live. But now I feel like we're caught up with it, and we want to stay with that now. So we've got to make sure that we stay ahead of the trends and keep up with everything.
Now, we did have that famous cocktail here called a shot and a beer. Now, do you know the real story of how a shot and a beer is actually prepared?
I don't know the full Boilermaker story, but I know it was created in Pittsburgh. But I know that you can either drop it in, which was one way, but for me it's open a can and put a glass right next to it, and there you go.
Well, that was what I was referring to, the fact that the steel workers and the real Pittsburghers did exactly that. They had a shot glass like Billy the Kid or Wyatt Earp in a Western bar, but then they'd have a beer on the side, and before they started drinking, they would drop the whiskey glass into the beer. Sounds like a waste of good whiskey in a way.
It can be a waste of good whiskey, but it is also a good way to cover up bad whiskey. So it kind of works in both ways. I know that's kind of how Permanis became famous, too. Instead of, you know, being able to have your sides and everything separate, they had to give it to you all as one thing together because of the steel workers. And I think that same concept went with the shot and beer. So you had your Boilermaker in one hand, your Permani sandwich in the other hand. That seems like the way it works.
Now, the cocktail menu itself is somewhat unique because for those people who actually remember landline telephones and keeping your telephone number index right by the phone, there was a special gadget developed for that, and you had those put to a new purpose.
Yes, we actually decided one of the big things is trying to reuse, recycle, and redo, along with all the aesthetics of this place, was the Bates address book that I know my grandparents had, my father had, where you slide it down the letter and you pop it open, and it opens that letter with addresses. But instead of coming, you know, opening to a letter, you are going to open to a couple cocktails. So if you go to the letter O, it'll open up to the old-fashioned on the top side, which is our classic on the letter O, and then it'll open up to a different cocktail, which is one of our specialties, and then so it changes based on that.
So that's why they're called Bates. I couldn't understand it. They call them the Bates Cocktail Finder. Are you breaching somebody's copyright here?
I never thought about if we were breaching their copyright, but the company's been out of business for a little while because we have to buy all vintage ones. So, oh, it's not? She's giving me an ugly face like it's not out of business. But I tried to get as much information as I could about it. We couldn't find new ones. We had to go research old cocktails, and we had to find them all over the country at, you know, vintage stores. We shop online at vintage stores and eBay and wherever we could get them to be able to use them as our cocktail menu.
Ice is a big thing. Now, In the land where I was raised, you got very little ice with your drink. If you ordered ice with your scotch in Scotland, they probably wouldn't serve it to you at all. But you're emphasizing here the importance of the right kind of ice in the right kind of cocktail. Tell us a little bit more about how you've implemented that here.
Well, one, I do agree that you don't necessarily have to add ice to scotch to make it great, because it usually starts out great, and then you can add a little water to open it up. But we do have a bunch of different type of ices that we use. We have our ice program where we have a 300-pound block of ice. It is crystal clear. You wouldn't know it's frozen if you looked at it. And we chainsaw that down to big ice cubes so it melts a little slower. So you don't have to – we're not here to do a shot and a beer thing. So you don't have to just chug your drink to worry about it getting diluted. It can sip on it without – it'll keep it cold but without diluting it too much, because dilution is very important to the balance of a cocktail. We also do shaved ice in other cocktails. Like, we have a tiki cocktail, the H word, comes in a copper pineapple, and it's shaved ice. And then we also make a lot of our own ice cubes. We try and, like I said earlier, be green and reuse, recycle. And we use the whole lemon. We use the peel for a garnish and the oils. We use the juice in the cocktail. And we actually take all the pulp and seeds and grind it up and add a little sugar and water and freeze it and make it into sorbet ice cubes.
So the two extremes. You have shaved ice, and then you have block ice. and you served as a cocktail with each one of those concepts. Now, is the shaved ice specifically the idea is that it will melt rather quickly and will reduce the temperature rather quickly?
Yes, the shaved ice one, it is, so it dilutes a little more. It's a little sweeter of a drink. It's kind of like a snow cone. You know, you have that shaved ice snow cone type of concept. So that, or like we do a crushed ice for our mint juleps, so they dilute it a little more because it's an alcohol forward where you want that dilution versus, you know, the apple court, which is one of the cocktails you guys tried, the last cocktail y'all tried. That one, you don't want it to dilute and ruin it, so you want it to slow sipper. So it depends on the drink and the base of the drink. We also serve drinks that are up that aren't on ice at all. We have other ice cubes we use that don't, like a lot of places you go, they have ice that cracks really quickly. We have bigger ice cubes, so it doesn't crack and dilute too quickly, but it gets the drink cold enough. So like I said, you can work on that perfect dilution with the ice, and we are lucky to have Giuseppe help us with all of that, and he spends a lot of hours working on all of our ice for us.
Now you also have an apprentice who's learning how to do this. Is this like an insurance policy, or do you need two icemen?
It's kind of both, actually. The amount of time and the amount of ice we've been going through now between adding this whole new bar program means that we're going through twice as much ice, and especially the big blocks, because he has to make some for the shaved ice specifically that we shave, hand shave. But yeah, so so James, the apprentice, which he got nicknamed today instead of apprentice, he's the apprentice. He's been doing it for about 2 to 3 months now. He's been training and learning how to do it. Just learning whether it's shaping the ice, how to make sure it's clean, how to, you know, cut it and trim it to the right size and everything from that, and how to make it, which is very important.
Now, this is not just a bar. This is a part of a restaurant, but it's a part of a restaurant with its own special menu program, as I understand it, and we sample that tonight.
Yes, so instead of just being the regular Butcher and the Rye menu, we're adding on some smaller plates and some other specialty stuff so that we can pair with the cocktails based on it. So we have a lot more savory cocktails that'll pair with the food, using a lot more of Indian and Eastern spices and a lot more healthy aspects, so we can pair, so the food and the cocktails will pair. But you can also get anything from the regular menu. If you want one of the 800 whiskeys, you can get that. If you want to have one of our regular food items, we have all that available as well up here. But this stuff at the Rye Bar is not available anywhere else in the restaurants.
When you say the stuff, you mean the special dishes and the cocktails?
Yes.
Got it. Okay. Now, we're rapidly being surrounded by people who are enjoying themselves. The whole Butcher and the Rye establishment, the taco place next door, have been off to a flying start. Are you off to a flying start too?
Yes, I've been here a year. I've been blessed when I moved back to Pittsburgh, blessed to be able to take this job on. And it is, up here has been it's been amazing. We've launched the menu about a week ago, and it's been nonstop busy for us so far. And it's been great to get a lot of, you know, you only get better making the cocktails the more often you make them. And it's great because people are willing to try new things and experience new things based on our bartenders being able to show them different styles and different things that they didn't realize they would like or something that's out of their comfort zone.
I'm not supposed to be talking because I'm raspy. But I really want to ask you, because you guys are about not only recreating classic cocktails with a fresh twist, but predicting. You're about predicting what's next. From the point that you are at now, what do you predict will be the next waves of new cocktails?
Well, right now I know Scotch cocktails are becoming very popular right now. I think people were afraid of Scotch for a little while because of the price point, but now all alcohol's kind of gotten to the same price point at this point. And to be honest with you, with tequila, I'm amazed how well tequila's gone over. And you never thought in the middle of winter in Pittsburgh people would come to Taco and have tequila cocktails. So for here, the biggest thing I'm working on, I think, is using a lot of healthier aspects. It's using local, but also using those almost medicinal spices. People are a lot more health conscious about what they're eating and drinking, trying to be organic, trying to be green as best we can, and that aspect of where we're going with the cocktails. And then from that point forward, I don't know, like we're working with our kitchen, and we have a pastry chef, so we're doing all kinds of desserts with alcohol base. We've been working on the drafts, and we have bottled cocktails, and we also just working on every aspect of it. I did a pop-up here about a year and a half ago, and I actually put the cocktail inside the ice. Similar, I know Aviary in Chicago has done stuff like that. But to be honest with you, a lot of it is, part of it is keeping it casual enough so that people can enjoy themselves and also helping them learn and educate. But they also help educate us as well, so we get to learn from them. And that will help us determine what the next trends are going to be and where it goes.
Now, these are not my words. You actually admitted to being a madman about buying bourbons. Tell us the number and how many you add a day.
When I started here, I believe we were around 300 whiskeys, majority American whiskeys, but we've had probably, I think, 20 to 30 scotches. I've been here a little over a year, and we have over 800 now. Yes, I really am into great whiskeys. I love great whiskey. And we are fortunate enough to have Courtney here, who's our scotch. He's our scotch person, and he loves scotches. So he took us from 20 scotches to about 150. And I just try and stay, you know, it seems like there's all these new whiskey companies opening up. And some of them are great, some of them aren't. But it's just nice to have them so we can try them, compare them. And it helps the whole staff gets to try most of them where they can educate so they can learn what flavors they like, how to pair them as well. But I love the fact that we have over 800 whiskeys, and I'm hoping by next year we'll have over at bourbon specifically, I think we have between 500 and 600, maybe 600 bourbon, about 200 rye and other American, and then probably about 100 scotches.
Now, the next chapter is not exactly secret, because I'm looking across the bar at seven taps, which are going to be cocktails on tap. As we conclude this discussion, tell us some more about what that means to the drinker.
So with cocktails on draft, one of the biggest problems with cocktail bars is speed, and they want some of the show and they want some of it, but they don't want to wait 15 or 20 minutes for every drink. So what that helps us do is it helps us alleviate some of those problems by putting seven cocktails where we can just pour your Sazerac. We barrel age a lot of them, and then we'll put them on draft. So last week we had a barrel aged Sazerac on draft that we aged for about 9 months in an old cognac barrel, which is what the original Sazerac was the cognac. So we did a rye Sazerac, and we aged it in a cognac barrel. It kind of changed the flavors a little bit, and then we put it on draft so we can just pour it and serve it to you right away. It's already chilled, it's already been diluted, and it's already ready to go. So it helps alleviate some of that time where people just have to wait that 15, 20 minutes, because no matter how great of a drink you make, if it takes forever, they're not going to like it. So that's part of what that does. And it also, it's just, you know, different, unique, different styles, different looks. It's, you know, beer isn't the only thing. I know in Pork and Beans, the new place, we're going to have wine, beer, and cocktails on draft. So that helps. We also are going to be bottling a bunch of cocktails. So we can just hand you a cocktail, you pop it open and pour it over the ice, just like it were a Coca-Cola, but it'll be a pre-made cocktail.
We had a wonderful time here. We enjoyed ourselves. Everybody else here is enjoying themselves as well. Rick DeChance went, the boss went by, but I don't know which way he went. Seems to us like he has another hit on his hands. And Spencer, you're a big part of that. So we wish you all the best for the holiday season and continued increase in the excitement surrounding the Rye Bar.
Thank you very much for coming, and hopefully we'll see you guys again soon. And I hope everyone comes out and tries all these new cocktails and gives us the biggest thing is give us honest feedback more than anything, so that we know. Because if people just go and tell their friends without letting us know, we never know what's working and what's not. So it always helps to have honest feedback. But hopefully we'll see y'all again. And cheers.
Say good night.
Good night.
I can't talk.
And has no voice left, but that was co-host Ann saying good night. And a good night to all of you, and thank you so much for listening, and thank you so much, Spencer, for being a part of the program.
Thank you for having me. Enjoy the rest of your evening.
And we'll be right back after a short break, so don't go away.
Podcasting services for On the Menu Radio are provided by ASP Station, www.aspstation.net.
Welcome back. We've been talking about this new rye bar in a restaurant called Butcher and the Rye. We thought we'd give you a little orientation, take you back to an interview we did in 2014 with the chef owner, Rick DeShantz, and Tolga Sedman.
Yeah, he's partner Tolga.
And also, update you a little bit that since we did that interview about this restaurant that's housing this wonderful rye bar, this genius duo who is totally reviving the whole dining and drinking nightlife in downtown Pittsburgh.
Yeah, you don't like these guys hardly at all.
Actually, since then, have opened one of my favorite restaurants, which is Taco, which my favorite thing is, you look that up, is the octopus taco. But anyhow, and they're also working on another restaurant called Pork and Beans, and they also have some proprietary concessions in one of our hockey venues, Consol Energy Center.
So if it turns out when you listen to this interview that you're wondering if these guys are ever going to stop, the answer is no.
No. Well, this dynamic duo has done it again. Rick DeShantz, chef, and Tolga Sevdik. You've started out as partners with a previous restaurant called Meat and Potatoes, which is a big hit in Pittsburgh. And now you have Butcher and the Rye, a gorgeous name, I might say, and it showcases the great abilities. Richard, chef, you've been doing this for how long, the chefing business?
Too long. I started as a child. I started in the kitchen at 17, and I went to culinary school at 9. I just turned 42, so over 20-some years.
Right. And you've... In addition to formal training, you've had a lot of restaurant experience, restaurants that you started on your own, and also you spent a year sort of camping out, trying out different restaurants as a stage, right?
I staged around a lot, yeah, my early years. I lived in Colorado for a long time. I staged through Chicago, Puerto Rico, so I did kind of wanted to see the world and see different food and try different things and just kind of open my eyes up a little bit.
Well, I certainly have, and you have this ability to come out with these incredible concepts. At some point, I've said this to you before, I could just see you becoming a freewheeling restaurateur along the lines of Stephen Starr, because you have such great concepts and you set these places up with every single detail covered. But let's talk about your new restaurant, because we just experienced that, and I had so much fun there. It is a wonderful place. It's called Butcher and the Rye. And tell us the concept.
Well, it's kind of exactly what you said when you said you had fun there. That was kind of what we were going for. We wanted some fun, drink-driven, unpretentious, kind of unique little watering hole with great food. Coming off of Meat and Potatoes, which is kind of on the same format, it just tweaked in a little different way. We wanted it to be no tablecloth, heavy drink-driven, but I'm so very heavy food-driven as well.
Yeah, you're still cooking.
No, yeah, we're still cooking extremely a lot, to the point where it's a little more refined than Meat and Potatoes, a little more attention to detail, a little smaller plates, a little more farm to table. We have only 2 dining rooms, both hold 20. So we're only doing reservations for about 40 seats, and then we have communal tables in the front, and then we have the private cocktail bar upstairs for reservations as well.
Yeah, how do we give listeners an understanding of how detail-driven you are, the decor?
My mind don't stop, and I kind of like saying I don't really think I sleep at night. So if I'm not actually designing something or I'm not building something at the restaurant, I'm online trying to search chairs or tables. And it's for me, everything has to kind of make sense. Like, the food has to match the decor. The service has to match the type of food we're doing. The alcohol has to have, big influence as well. And so we try not to have no stones unturned. We actually really try to focus on every aspect, from the purse hooks on the bar to...
Oh, yeah, there's little rabbits.
They're little rabbits. Yeah, the rabbits upstairs and downstairs are actually anti-door handles.
Are they really?
Yeah, and there's a lot of green going on. I mean, we actually all recyclable wood. The bar upstairs made out of full doors. All the lighting upstairs are actually all antique. 50% of the plates that we actually serve all our food on are all actually antique. I mean, we're, as you go through this place, there's a lot of recycled, a lot of green, and even things when I actually built, like, ceilings out of reclaimed wood, then I turned around and took all the scraps, and I made little planks, and I used them into an actual another area. So it's interesting to see how things overlap and how, like you said, attention to detail things are. From
you do a lot of this work yourself. I mean, hands-on work. And you also employ a lot of local art talent.
Yeah, that's what we wanted to do. This space has a lot of different, you know, we want, you know, not your normal cookie-cutter style. We wanted to kind of break the mold a little bit with this space. We wanted to do something kind of unique and interesting. And being actually in the culture district and having gallery crawls and all the artists down here, I thought this place should show a lot of different artwork and things like that. So we have a lot of different pieces done by different artists. And, like, in the one upstairs room, the library room, there's actually all the tables are hand-painted from different artists. And I kind of wanted them to do their own thing. I wanted their own interpretation. So I actually took them through the space and showed them that what I was doing and just kind of gave them a little free rein, say, what do you think of the space? And if you had to paint something, what would it be? And they all came up with different unique tables, which was kind of cool because they're all separate from each other. And you can tell different styles and different artworks.
Now, your partner, Tolga, has a special role in Meat and Potatoes, and also at Butcher and the Rye, because when you opened Meat and Potatoes for the first time, we had the opportunity to sample the wonderful barrel cocktails that Tolga was brewing up. I think they were Manhattans and Negronis, unless my brain got fried. But then Butcher and the Rye went to a new level. So who's going to own up to the fact that they wanted to have more than 400 bourbons behind the bar? Whose idea was that?
I think it's Tolga's insanity right there.
Tolga, you were fixated, and you're new to the industry. You are not a lifelong restaurateur, but you really got hooked, didn't you?
Oh, yeah, I am. Now, you know, I actually went to Duquesne University for marketing. After I graduated, I just did some marketing for a steel company, and I hated it. I was working as a door guy at a restaurant club, and I loved the business, became the manager, GM. That's how I actually met Rick and worked for Rick at 909. And he just basically told me, my next restaurant, I want to make you a partner, and which he did. We opened Meat and Potatoes, now Butcher and the Rye, now we're working on different concepts. But the bourbon, I did work on the bourbon list, but it was just basically, you know, me and Rick, like he explained, you know, when we walk in this space, what can we do with this space? Everything has to kind of match each other. And then we say, you know what, let's do a crazy, amazing bourbon list, something like one of the best lists in the country.
I mean, you said it was more bourbons than anybody in the country. Is that true?
What we did was the GQ magazine come out with this best whiskey bars in the country. And we opened the magazine and we hit some of these places that they were showing the best whiskey bars. And they're not even close to what we have in-house. Some of the stuff we display, actually, we have more stuff than we display because there's not much space to display. But we worked hard on it. You know, I did work almost like 6-7 months just to create that list and put it together.
And you have the whole cocktail program going as well, right?
Yes, we do. You know, we hire some of the best bartenders in the city. Mike Mills is running our bar program. He was actually our bar manager at Meat and Potatoes. Now he oversees to build places. The new talent that we hired, you know, probably I can say we have one of the best bar program in the city, maybe the best.
Now, you do offer wine, but one of the things you seem to favor is cocktails or liquor throughout the meal, which is an interesting and different idea. I mean, we've had whiskey-tasting menus. We haven't had cocktails for dinner every night together with our food. Now, what was behind that idea?
Cocktails, you know, everybody can do a wine pairing, but there's more things that you can do with the cocktail. You know, like Chef Rick's food, there's, you know, so many ingredients. And we can come up with, there's so many liquors, there's so many aperitifs out there, we can come up with some kind of different cocktails that can match better than any wine with the food that we're serving. That was our idea. You know, if you're serving a certain kind of thing, we can match it with this type of cocktail, with this type of liquor, and just come up with some kind of perfect pairing.
Rick, I love your names.
Yeah, Rick, you want to give us...
Well, my take on it is, well, first off, I believe strongly in picking your animal and picking and doing amazing. And for us, picking bourbon was what we're going to go after. I would rather do one concept and blow it out of the water and do it, be the best ever, and go 100% for like just bourbon, opposed to trying to do bourbon, trying to do gigantic wine lists, trying to do just gigantic beer list. So for us, it was figured we wanted to focus on bourbon, and that was what we're going to be. And for drinks are, especially with the mixologists and the bartenders, the way they're going this, you know, right now, I mean, it's changing, and it's a different scene. And with Maggie and Mike and Erica, and it's kind of like cooking. I mean, they're there as long as I am. They get there. Their bartenders get there at like times 11 o'clock in the morning. They're there on their days off. They're making all their own syrups, they're making different bitters, and they're really, it's an interesting craft, and it's the same thing as like food. It's just a layer of flavors. Picking your ingredients, picking the season, picking what you want to do, and then just layering these different ingredients together and coming up with something special is the kind of the same way we do food. So I just thought it would just be such a unique thing to have these great bartenders / chef bartenders and then us to really come together and create a unique experience. So that's kind of what our folks behind that.
Now, give us an idea of what a typical meal might consist of, like this cocktail and this dish, this cocktail and this dish, this cocktail and this dish, through an evening at Butcher and Dry.
Well, we change our menu frequently, and we work, you know, like I have actually a special board, which my waiters keep telling me, whoa, slow down, because I do keep pulling things and doing creative. And the way the food is, it's super refined, but it's also super simple and straightforward. Like I do a lamb sauce, lamb neck gravy, which we actually do. We braise lamb neck in like a tomato sauce, and we serve it with whipped ricotta and grilled bread. So it's kind of like a plate. When you look at the plate, it looks real elegant and something, and then it's actually rustic at the same time. You have this reclaimed wood and these animal heads, but then you have this beautiful velvet wallpaper and these marble tables. The food, I think, kind of almost resembles the same thing. It actually, we're using like great ingredients, Elysian Field lamb, but we're presenting it in more of a rustic format. So, and then as far as the bartenders go, I mean, it just depends on what I'm doing for the day. I'll talk to them and say, hey, I have this squab dish I did last week. And so once again, you know, we're doing squab and, I added some foie gras in there, and we did kabocha squash. And then I talked to them, and so I put cherries in the squab dish, and they started working on like an old-fashioned and doing something like that, like a heavy game type of dish with an old-fashioned. So it's like I said, it just depends on the day and what we're into. And as far as, you know, we're still new. We've only been open for a week, so.
Well, how did the word get out so fast? I mean, we were there early, and by the time we left, the place was jammed. I mean, you said that you sometimes need crowd control on weekends.
We do. We have actually two to three, which is insane for Pittsburgh. But we do have three, like, we have, like, doormen at will, just to kind of monitor it. Somebody upstairs, and then we have one or two people outside. And some people don't react well to this. I don't think they understand that we're trying to. It's not like we're singling out people like, oh, you're not good enough to come in here. But we want the people that are actually in here to have a good time. And it's a fine line between, like, it's busy and acting, you're having a good time, and it's busy and it's crowded and you're having a bad time. You can't get a drink. The service is hard. So it's not about, because if it was about money, pack it up and say yippee and just, you know, go into it. But for us, it's about our customers and the people that are actually inside to really enjoy the experience they're having. So we try to monitor it. And it's, like I said, it don't come off always great because they think it's like singling out or it's new to Pittsburgh. Like, well, we're just going to the bar. Well, we're actually all booked at the bar right now. And they just, they're having a bad, hard time reacting with it. But the main thing is the people that are actually inside are having a great time. And that's kind of our focus.
Now, you do some interesting things. What you think might be traditional turns out it really isn't. Your shepherd's pie is a good example. I mean, I know what shepherd's pie is supposed to look like because my mother used to fix it. But yours is just a little the concept just a little bit different.
Well, yeah, like I said, we like to have fun here. We like to, it's a balance of the ingredients, but it's I like to use things that people can relate with a little bit, like say shepherd pie, or we do play on dumplings, instead of chicken and dumplings, we do rabbit and dumplings, and then we just, you know, we do a lot of bone marrow, but the shepherd pie is, we actually do cheeks, and we braise them off. We marinate them overnight, then we braise them for like 6 hours, then we pull them, then we clean them, and then we make a sauce out of them. And then it's almost like an elegant dish where we do the cheeks, and then we do cream peas with bacon and mint, and then we do like a roasted carrots that we actually sous vide, and a little butter, honey, and then we actually roast them off, and then we do a potato foam on top of that, which is Yukon Golds, and then we actually add a lot of olive oil. We cook them off traditionally, and we puree them up, and we put them in an ISI container, kind of like a whipped cream, and then we actually put this really rich, you know, Yukon Gold and olive oil, and it's kind of like a topping on top of these cheeks, just to kind of make this velvety, rich, intense flavor. So
now you're big on pig, so you have two pigs. You have pigs with wings.
Yeah,
and pig candy. Tell us about those, and then we'll ask Tolga to tell us what he would recommend as a drink to go with them.
Okay. Well, right now, I guess that's the only two. We do change, like I said, we change a lot, but we have the pig candy is just the pork belly, and like I said, we kind of have a fun thing with things. So what we did is we actually put a dry rub on it, and we cure it overnight, and then we slow roast it in the oven for about 3.5 hours. And then we pull it out, and then we chill it, and then we cut it, and then we actually roast it off to it's like really golden brown. And some of the cure that we put on it has a little bit of sugar on it, so it starts getting this beautiful, crusty, like caramelized on the outside. And then we do a miso, like butterscotch with it, a miso caramel at will. And then we just take miso, we make a caramel sauce, we actually add miso to it, a little bit of butter. So it's like this butterscotch caramel sauce on top of it, and then we pair it with kimchi apples, which we use apples, daikon, celery. We make a kimchi porridge. So you kind of get this spicy, you know, and then you get the sweet, and then you get the richness of the fat, and we just top it with a little bit of cilantro and fresh radish, just for a little peppery, or for the bite for the radish.
Now, what would we drink with that, Tolga?
Probably Butcher Sour. It would be a great perfect answer, which is a cocktail we have in our bar. The ingredients are, we got rye whiskey in there, a fresh-made sour, and whiskey bitters.
Okay, how about one more dish? And let's start off with Tolga. Tolga, one of your favorite cocktails, and then we'll ask Rick to pair a dish with it.
I'm just going to go with our bourbons.
Okay.
Definitely, yeah. One of the bourbons. My favorite right now, that's what I'm drinking after a long day, is the Black Maple Hill, 12 years old.
Okay.
It's one of my favorites. That's one of my biggest suggestions to any customer that who wants the first time want to try a bourbon, and then just go with the Black Maple Hill.
And what would we eat along with that, Rick?
Which year did you pick, Tolga?
Black Maple Hill?
12 years. I would pick something that's going to stand out. It's a little bitey, heavy game.
I liked your dirty pasta, actually.
Yeah, the dirty pasta. I love that pasta, too. That actually would go well with that, just because, you know, you got the livers, the richness of the duck. We actually grind all our duck in-house, and then we deglaze it with a little bit of brandy. So it's kind of like a play on when you think of if you're going to make the pate or dirty rice. We actually take the whole ducks. We break them. I grind all the breast and the legs, and then I take all the livers, then I actually confit all the hearts and gizzards, and so we kind of deconstruct it all, and then I make a stock out of the bones. So when we make the pasta itself, we actually start with the ground duck, the livers, and then we add a little shallot, a little garlic, and then we deglaze with a little brandy, and then I add the duck stock into that, and then we actually add the gizzards and the hearts back into it. So, I mean, something like that would actually go amazing.
Okay, so there we are with our Maple Hill 12-year-old.
Yeah, let's do a website.
Yes,
and
yes.
I think reservations are absolutely recommended, although you do have some space set aside for walk-ins, right?
We do have in the front area, we have two large communal tables, plus everyone's welcome at the bar to drink, or to eat, excuse me. So it does get a little busy.
Busy. So what about the website?
The website basically just directs you to make reservation by on the phone.
The website is?
Our website is it's butcherandtherye.com.
Butcherandtherye.com. That's correct. Great. Well, you two are amazing. And, I can't wait to get back and find out what else you're up to. And you're still already thinking about your next concept. I can't believe it.
Well, we have a space next door that's kind of connected to Butcher.
Oh, I wanted to mention that. Yes, I forgot about that because that's in the works now.
Yeah, that is actually, we're in construction right now. It's
Creative Taqueria.
Yeah, it's a little taqueria. It's 2,000 square feet. And it's actually going to be connected to Butcher. So it just made sense for us. It was an empty building. It, was an eyesore. It just was a smart play. And we thought what I said before, kind of pick one thing and kind of go at it and try to make it amazing. I thought, why don't we kind of do the same reproduction of tequila and mezcal and street food. And so it's going to kind of fit in the same format, but it'll be a little more tequila driven.
Well, as I said, you two are both amazing. And, keep up.
Thank you.
Bringing up all these wonderful concepts. You certainly elevated the dining options in the city quite a lot. All right. Until the next time I see you both. Ciao, huh?
Sounds good. Thank you.
Thank you.
Podcasting services for On the Menu Radio are provided by ASP Station. www.aspstation.net.
Welcome back. As I said in the beginning, a lot of activities going on in Pittsburgh. We, a while back, introduced you to a vodka producer that's made national inroads into the Hall of Fame for vodka, Boyd and Blair. And now we have another one that actually is pretty much as much a scene, a community activity, as it is a spirits producer. We're going to be talking to David Harries about what goes on at Wiggle Whiskey.
When On the Menu first heard about Wiggle Whiskey, we laughed. And that was about 5 or 6 years ago. And were we wrong in thinking that it wouldn't be possible for anyone with a sound mind to open a distillery right in the heart of the city of Pittsburgh? We're talking with David Harries, and in the background are people who are having fun. We'll get back to them in just a moment. First of all, David, welcome to On the Menu. Tell us the beginning of the story of Wiggle.
Sure. Thank you very much. The beginning story is, I guess, really close. The story of the business started when the Meredith Crier family, who are the owners, were celebrating their daughter Meredith's graduation from business school with a trip to Niagara on the Lake, and they were doing a lot of winery tours, and maybe in some sort of vine-induced dreams thought it'd be a good idea to open a family business in Pittsburgh, and maybe a whiskey distillery at that. And the reason for whiskey distillery kind of comes back to the region's history. Pittsburgh has such a long-standing history and kind of a love affair with whiskey, particularly going back to the Whiskey Rebellion at the end of the 18th century, when Pittsburgh was the whiskey capital of the world. And at one point, people in West Pennsylvania were making half a barrel's worth of whiskey for every man, woman, and child alive in the U.S.
Now, I thought Wiggle was made up, but Mr. Wiggle was a real person.
Yeah, he sure was. Philip Wiggle, who may have pronounced his name Weigel, was a German immigrant, active in this region, distilling, a farmer-distiller, and after the Revolutionary War, the U.S. coffers were pretty empty. Alexander Hamilton decided the best way to raise money to pay off the Revolutionary War debt would be to levy an excise tax. And that didn't go over well, particularly people in Pittsburgh. They decided that they weren't going to pay it, and they put up quite a bit of a fuss.
A real fuss that actually got Mr. Wiggle in rather a lot of trouble, but somebody came to his defense.
Yeah, that's correct. So as the rebellion kind of proceeded over several years, it came to a head with some of the federal folks in Pittsburgh having their houses burned down, people getting shot at, and eventually enough got to be enough, and Alexander Hamilton asked his friend and boss, George Washington, for a little help, and about 4,000 troops marched on Pittsburgh. They were led by Washington himself as far as Bedford, who then sent them on with a general, and in what we call a terrible night, they arrested a ton of people responsible in the rebellion and brought them to a place that no one should go, a place worse than many places on Earth, Philadelphia. And they were stood trial for treason. And in fact, Wiggle and one of his counterparts were found guilty and sentenced to hang by the neck until dead. But in a little bit of a benevolent twist, Washington decided that it would be better to pardon Wiggle than send him to the gallows.
You also mentioned something, and I have a feeling these events might be connected, although you didn't connect them, because not too long after that, in a place called Mount Vernon, the aforementioned George Washington started to make whiskey.
Yeah, he sure did. I think he may have seen the economic prospects of distilling being pretty good. And certainly we have no reason to believe that he did not do anything but pay his taxes in full and on time.
Now, fast forward to 2015 and almost Christmas, and this place is a hive of activity, filled with people who are putting labels on bottles by hand. And an awful lot of what you do here is artisanal and hands-on. Is that correct?
That's absolutely correct. Everything here is made by hand. We bucket the raw grain into our mill by hand. We turn valves by hand to control the flow of the distillate. We fill barrels by hand. We empty barrels by hand. We fill bottles by hand. And when it comes to labeling these bottles, we actually are really fortunate to have such a legion of fans in the area who graciously donate their time to us, come in. It's kind of reminiscent of a quilting bee. They come in, maybe have a cocktail, sit down, chit-chat, and help us put labels on all of our bottles, something we could never do or afford to do on our own. And it's really kind of something that we feel very blessed to be supported by the community.
If someone's listening and wants to know how you get in on this action, is there a website? Is there some sort of a direction you could give them?
Absolutely. Folks who are interested in most things Wiggle should check out our website, which is wigglewhiskey.com. We'll list tickets for our labeling parties, which are free. They tend to be on Tuesday evenings, and we would love to see you at our next labeling party.
Now, hold on a second. Let's make sure that there is an E or there is not an E in whiskey.
We put an E in whiskey.
So it's W-I-S-K-E-Y, whereas the Scots, who should know better, just have a Y. So that's how you do it. Now you make, for a small operation, you sure make a lot of different alcoholic products. Tell our listeners some of the range.
Well, when we first started, we just had two products. We had a white rye and a white wheat, and in the intervening 3.5 years, we've produced, I think, close to 40 different products and brands. Things like our flagship Monongahela rye whiskey. We've made bourbon whiskey. We're set to release an absinthe tomorrow. And we just can't get enough of new product development, kind of exploration, and seeing, you know, what we can try to do. We're a small operation, which gives us a lot of flexibility to try things that maybe large distilleries just can't afford to do.
At some point, do you think it'll actually settle down and there'll be just like the two or three things you do best?
I hope not.
One of the things that I think is a sign of the new Pittsburgh is how many, there's small operations, there's a lot of partnering going on, and you guys are right at the forefront of partnering.
Yeah, we feel very lucky to be in a city with so many people doing so many neat things. Our most recent partnership is probably our grappa. And grappa, for those who may not know, is a spirit that's distilled from pomace, kind of the leftover scraps of wine manufacture. And we're working both with the Grapperia, which is an excellent cocktail bar right in Lawrenceville, and a winery called 6 Mile Cellars in Erie. And the three of us together kind of had this idea to make a grappa. 6 Mile Cellars provided the fermentation and the grape advice. We used our still and distillation experience to turn it into a spirit. And we're selling it kind of mostly to the Grapperia. And we really hope to do a lot more of these purchases in the future. It's something that's kind of exciting for us, keeps things interesting, and allows us to kind of pick the brains of some of the most creative people in Pittsburgh.
Yeah, now I understand why there's so much absent-minded liquor on this table in front of me, because you're getting ready for an official launch, which will happen, and will have happened by the time listeners you hear this. But where are people going to be able to buy the product in Pennsylvania, and will they be able to buy it anywhere else?
We're a relatively small operation, and so the best place to find our products is at our location here in the Strip District, 2401 Smallman, where all of our products are available. We do have some small listings of the PLCB all across Pennsylvania, and so you can find our more popular products like our Monongahela Rye Whiskey, our take on a spiced rum, and our Dutch-style gin in those stores. If you live in the East Coast, you may be able to find us in distributed markets in Maryland, New Jersey, New York, Delaware. And we hope to expand in the future, but it's really a patient game. We're making whiskey, but it takes a long time to mature. And so, unfortunately, as much as we'd like to have one, we just don't have a time machine yet.
And because of our archaic liquor laws, you can't ship either, I'm guessing, right?
Actually, we are able to ship directly to customers in Pennsylvania and the Washington, D.C. area. If you go to our website, we're able to ship it directly to your door.
Oh, that's wonderful. Now, let's go through some more. We have tasted Genever, Wiggle Genever, which didn't come from Holland. It came out of the same still as the whiskey, which is interesting. I didn't even know that. And a very handsomely bottled straight rye whiskey. And this is a good point at which to ask you to explain some of the relationships that you have that get you the raw material that you need to be able to make these products.
Yeah, we're really only as successful as our partners are and our customers are. And it took a little bit of doing, but we've been working with local farms in the area, sourcing our heirloom organic grain. And a lot of the rye grain that goes into both our straight rye whiskey and our Dutch-style gin comes from farms like those in Washington County. And we get almost all of our grain for within just a couple hundred miles of the distillery. And we're lucky to see that as we grow, they grow with us. And so I think at this point, we may be the largest consumer of rye grain in Pennsylvania.
Now, if you want to know how it's done, through the website, you can also sign up for a tour. I notice there's one going on right now. You, of course, gave us a custom tour for ourselves, but you can come here pretty much any time and book a tour?
Yeah, so we do scheduled tours every Saturday, throughout the day on Saturday, and the best place to book those is, again, on our website. But we are open 7 days a week. The tasting room is open, and if you're here, we'd be happy to give you a peek at the still and answer any questions you may have. But Saturday we do about an hour-long tour, includes cocktails and tastings, and it's kind of half history of the Whiskey Rebellion and half on the production of distilled spirits.
Now, a very important part of the process of some but not all of your products is barrels in which you age in order to mature the spirit, and also they pick up some color at the same time. Talk to us a little bit about that, because rather uniquely, you're not getting barrels from France. You're getting barrels from some fairly non-traditional places.
Yeah, our barrels come from Minnesota and Kentucky, and all of our barrels are made of white American oak that's been charred inside. The rules for us as far as whiskey manufacture dictate that we use brand new charred American oak barrels, and we can only use them once. And that means we go through quite a few barrels. It also means that we're able to use some of our barrels a second time for other products. So we offer an aged gin, we offer an aged rum, and in fact we use some of these whiskey barrels to take some of the roughest edges off of our grappa. We actually put our grappa in used barrels for about 2 months just to take off the sand off the roughest corners.
And they pick up an interesting color along the way.
They do, yeah. All spirit comes out of the still crystal clear. And so if you drink American whiskey or Scotch whiskey, you notice it has a little bit of that kind of amber or copper color to it. That's coming exclusively from the barrel. The barrel is giving us color. It's giving us flavor. It's giving us all those great sweet notes, as well as some of the caramel and cinnamon, vanilla, coconut sort of notes. That's all coming from the wood. And so it's a kind of a complex marriage between the distilled spirit and what happens in the barrel during Senate aging.
So what does the future look like for Wiggle? I can't say Wiggle Whiskey anymore. You started out as Wiggle Whiskey, but now it's Wiggle Spirits of all kinds. What do you think is down the road?
I think we'll continue to see our kind of core portfolio expand. Hopefully we'll be able to produce and market more of the products that we've not been able to keep in stock all the time. We would love to offer our whiskey to more folks, especially within Pennsylvania. We also hope to continue to keep innovating. Just a few things we're coming out with this year. We're producing a ginger whiskey, which will come out in February. And we've also done a variety of malt whiskeys. These are kind of our one-off, we call them Wiggle Whims, and they tend to come out once a month, and they're kind of our latest experimentation efforts. And we may make them once and never again, or they may turn into a recurring product. But we really just hope to continue to kind of try new things. We'll try anything once.
So if the owners were here and we asked them, would you do it over again, what do you think they would say?
I think they definitely say yes. I think they probably said they would do a few things differently. But it's definitely a very fun place to work and some place that you really feel like you have some creative control, creative freedom, and it's always an exciting day to get up and come into Wiggle Whiskey.
But everything looks like it's done exactly the right way. The still is copper. Every step of the process is thoughtfully done.
It is. I think during the startup, a lot of the important fact gathering was done in partnership with both folks who had already established distilleries. We also work with the folks at Michigan State University who have a beverage alcohol program to kind of get a little bit of tips and tricks. And we learn something new every day, but it's important for us to do a lot of reading. We have a whole drawer, file cabinet full of textbooks that we will frequently flip back to and refer to with questions.
David, thank you so much. And what can we say but cheers?
Cheers. Thank you so much.
Next up, I'm assuming with this great surge of building of hotels in Pittsburgh, a lot of you people out there are coming to visit, which is fine with us. The hotels are really interesting in their character, and especially in how they're picking up the flavor and character of their location in Pittsburgh. We had a grand tour of the a new hotel, Indigo, Hotel Indigo, by GM Jordan Bartels, and a fine meal as well. Everybody has been waiting for this Hotel Indigo to open in East Liberty in Pittsburgh. It's an appealing brand, and we're going to be talking to the general manager, Jordan Bartels. I did it wrong.
It's Bartels.
He told me that in advance, so I still didn't get it right. Right. He's going to talk to us about this hotel, and then we're going to talk about also the food that we ate too much of in their restaurant. Jordan, it's been a long wait to open this hotel, and now you're open. What do you want to tell us? Hello? Hello, we're open?
Yes, I would say that good things come to those who wait, and definitely was worth the wait. We're very excited to offer this boutique hotel to share it and open it to the community. We have our restaurant, Wallace's Tap Room. We have 24-hour fitness center, free high-speed wireless. We have meeting space and 135 really spacious, uniquely designed guest rooms. So we are excited to be here. And yes, hello, Pittsburgh. Hello, East Liberty.
Now, how did this – I'm going to have to go back. Peter knows about this. I don't. I should probably put him on this. But this is a subsidiary of a subsidiary of a subsidiary brand. Tell us who Hotel Indigo is connected with.
Sure, absolutely. So Hotel Indigo is part of IHG, which is Intercontinental Hotels Group. We have brands such as Intercontinental, Crowne Plaza, one I'm sure everyone's heard of, Holiday Inn, Holiday Inn Express, Candlewood Suites, Staybridge Suites. So we have a lot of different brands. So we have IHG Rewards Club is our loyalty program. And so a lot of people will probably, the Holiday Inn name really resonates with everyone, but that's the family of brands that we have here.
Now, there's so many things to talk to you about this. I mean, like how big it is, where it is, why it's here. Let's start with why it's here. I don't know why you would have plopped this hotel down in the middle of East Liberty when you didn't know. I mean, now it's apparent that it's a totally redeveloped area. But when you committed here, it was not.
I think you have to have a little vision and a little faith. And, you know, people said the same thing when Starbucks came in, and then Home Depot, and then Target. So we're another one of those that really saw an opportunity here and wanted to invest in this community. And now it's starting to pay dividends. You see the growth and the development, and it's just great to be a part of that.
It's a moderately priced and a moderately sized hotel.
I would agree. I think, you know, the value proposition for all the amenities that we offer and the size and the feel of the rooms is definitely in that moderate price range. And, yeah, we're 135 rooms, so we're not so big you get lost when you come here, and we're small enough that we make your experience unique and memorable.
Now, I mean, I have to admit to a little personal attraction here is that when I grew up, my stepfather actually managed a hotel. I mean, a movie theater in this East Liberty corridor, a little ways away from where we're sitting now, and there were also five total movie theaters here, and I spent a lot of my life hanging out in these movie theaters and in the library, and, well, we'll talk about the Ace Hotel another time, but at any rate, to me, it's a very nostalgic place, and you've capitalized on that in your decor. Tell us how you've referred everything to the core of where you are in East Liberty in Pittsburgh.
Sure, I'm glad you noticed that, actually. We pay a lot of attention to the details, and one thing that Hotel Indigo is famous for, no two are alike, and each is reflective of their local neighborhood. And when you look back at the history on East Liberty in the early 1900s, was a very vibrant theater scene. And you had, as you mentioned, several theaters. You had the Nickelodeon, the Bijou Dream, the Sheraton, the Regent, to name a few. And so when you look throughout our hotel, and definitely within the guest rooms, you'll see those special touches, those nods to that era of yesteryear. And I think there is a bit of nostalgia there, and it resonates with people. People want something unique. They want something different for their travel destination than the standard beige box hotel that we've all stayed at, right?
Hey, and you even have a tribute a little to Catherine Variety, who I grew up with, too. I mean, I didn't grow up with her. I grew up with her idea. Anyhow, you have a restaurant here, and we just sampled that. And the chef is wonderful, isn't he? He's just like the nicest human being I've met in a long time. Why is this restaurant called Wallace's? And tell us when it's open.
Sure. Chef Jose is phenomenal. He's a great guy. Brings a world of experience, and he's done a masterful job blending local vendors and his own unique take on certain menu items. Wallace's, you have to actually probably come out to the property to appreciate it. But one of the buildings that makes up our hotel used to be the Governor's Hotel, and on the outside of the building, which was the original entrance to the Governor's Hotel, there's all the original masonry work, and there's a crest right above the entrance. And there's the letter CLW. And when we first saw that, we thought, this is really cool, but what does it mean? So we did a little research and found out that C.L. Wallace was the original architect and builder of the Governor's Hotel. So that's where you get the tribute to Mr. Wallace there, is Wallace's Tap Room.
Now, maybe you don't think of everything, but you certainly try. So a couple of things that you've told us about, and I'll ask you to expand on it, are the shuttle service, and the access to a full service health.
Absolutely, Peter. So, you know, what we try to do is make sure that our guests are comfortable. We provide convenient options for them, and sometimes getting around transportation can be confusing or challenging when you're not from the area. So we do a local shuttle within a 3-mile radius. It's available from 7 a.m. till 9 p.m., 7 days a week. We're happy to take people around. We also do have an on-site fitness center, 5 pieces of cardio, free weights, pulley system, and yoga equipment. But should you want something more and desire that full-service workout experience, we do have a partnership with Club One Fitness, which is maybe a 30 minutes at most from the hotel. It's an easy walk, or ties right into that shuttle again. We'd be happy to drive you over there.
And if you're a believer in public transportation, which Peter is, you can be in the center of the city of Pittsburgh in half the time it takes to drive there by going to the East Busway, which is close by, and I'm guessing that if it was raining, the shuttle would probably drop you there.
You guessed correctly, sir. Yeah, the new transit center is just phenomenal, and it's an easy way to get downtown. It's obviously environmentally friendly, taking one bus as opposed to 50 cars, and alleviates a lot of the traffic. It's a straight shot down there, so it's great to have that down here on the East End.
You know, I really think it's unfair to ask you this, and I don't think you're going to be able to answer it. But I've just been looking around at every city is building hotels and apartments. I mean, like, who's going to occupy them all? Our population is not increasing that fast. And I think that everybody's going to start cocooning after these recent events in Paris. I mean, you must look at the broader spectrum of your whole field here. What's going on with the hospitality industry that makes them think that everybody's going to be out traveling and staying at places and spending money on that stuff?
Well, I'll try to put on my economist hat, but I'm just a simple hotel manager. In my estimation, I think that this is a great question, and it's certainly there's risks and opportunities and threats in every market, but I believe Pittsburgh's been undersupplied for quite a while. And so you see this influx of new supply. With the East End growing the way that it has, you have several key demand generators here within a mile of the hotel, Google being obviously at the top of the list, Carnegie Mellon University, all the medical facilities, and then, you know, the University of Pittsburgh campus. There's so many things that people travel to this area for, not to mention we obviously have some professional sports teams, so go Steelers, I guess, if you're listening, go Pens, go Pirates. But yeah, it's I think this market is at that point where it's grown, and you know, if any market is undersupplied, you'll see investment come in and take those opportunities. I think we're probably starting to will feel the level off in the next year, and you'll see some of that growth slow a bit. But great question. I hope I answered it.
Well, I guess we'll see.
Right.
Thank you so much for your contribution, Jordan. Oh, well, Peter wants something.
Well, it would be a shame if we didn't give a very special welcome to our new neighbors. Listeners around the world, you might want to note that we could have walked here. Home OTM is 600 yards away. We welcome you to our neighborhood. We're delighted you're a part of it. We've been watching for a long time, hoping and praying you would finally get open, and here you are. So we wish you the very best of good fortune, Jordan, and I'm sure as we'll cross many times.
Thank you both. You've been very gracious, a delight to speak to this evening and dine with, and I appreciate the warm welcome to the neighborhood. We hope to make East Liberty proud and feel like this is a place they can refer their friends and relatives and come here for a cocktail or a dinner or Saturday brunch or whatever the case may be. So we really appreciate it. We're just excited to be here. Thank you.
again, from us here at On the Menu, we wish you all a very Merry Christmas, and we'll wish you a Happy New Year next week. If you join the program, same time, same place, we look forward to talking to you again then. You're going to say goodbye?
It's my turn.
You're going to say goodbye?
Bye-bye.